Welcome to the C Word, the Conservatives podcast. Today we're talking about our favourites. I'm Jenna Mathiasen, an objects conservator based in Carmarthen in Wales.
I'm Chloe Rumsey, an objects conservator based in Manchester in England.
I'm Solange, I'm a book and paper conservator based in Sheffield, England.
I'm Liz, a private painting conservator in Amsterdam.
I'm Federica Majomo. I am a conservator of antiquities based in Nicosia, Cyprus.
Jenny, did you notice
that there's more people?
That was a longer introduction section than normal.
I mean, it's a bit unusual, isn't it?
I don't know. It could possibly be. In fact, the last time we talked to everyone recorded, what did we talk about?
Well, yeah, exactly. The big announcement was that we were recruiting, and here we are. We've got another three people. This is basically our little getting to know you chat. And, we thought that maybe a nice way of doing that would be to sort of talk about some favourites that we've all got of different kinds and sort of just getting to know each other, really. It's like having a cup of tea with some friends, isn't it?
Yeah, I have a mega cup of tea.
Excellent.
I also have some sherry for the occasion because I thought, why
fancy.
Not?
That's very fancy.
Oh, yeah, I had some brandy earlier.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Liquid courage.
I did have a glass of wine.
You have a glass of wine. Nice, nice, excellent. So this is the first episode we're recording together as the new team. And we've done a couple of, we've spent the winter just sort of chatting and having meetings and, you know, getting to know each other a little bit. So we wanted to invite all of our listeners to one of those sort of things.
Oh my God, now we're going to have to make these people talk about themselves.
I know.
I feel really bad, but you guys signed up for this.
Shall we introduce the roles so that everyone knows?
Oh my God, Liz already put her hand up. This is happening.
Well, I'm Liz. I'm a recent graduate from the University of Amsterdam's master program. A little bit about me. My background is a bit mixed. So I got my master's in the Netherlands, but I got my bachelor's degree in Italy, where I also studied painting conservation, as well as some fresco work. Worked at the museum in my hometown in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And then I've worked at the Van Gogh Museum for a brief internship, as well as current jobs at the Dutch government and working across the Netherlands. So that's my educational background. And I decided right out of graduating to start my business. So I am already a private conservator. I started a month or two ago. I've had a few jobs. It's very exciting. I'm excited to talk more about private conservation because in academia, I feel like I've been surrounded by a lot of more institutionalized schools of thought. And I think that it's good to mix it up. Lots of study, very international. I'm happy that this is such an international group, not only on the podcast here with me today, but also the audience of this podcast.
So what's your experience with podcasting and what you're doing in the team now?
Right. I do have some experience with podcasting. During the pandemic, I started a podcast called the EC Podcast by and for emerging conservation professionals, where I had a similar format to the C Word. I was definitely inspired by this podcast. And I interviewed panels of all students at the time, some emerging professionals as well. And we discussed different topics in season one. And then for a very brief season two, I interviewed students at different university programs, including Fedra, who went to Cardiff.
Is this the perfect segue to Fedra?
I think it is. Yeah.
Oh, we didn't talk about what you were doing for the show, though.
Oh, I'm a co-host. Hi.
Fedra, your go.
So, hello, everyone. I am also a ECP co-host, along with Liz. I am so happy to be here. In terms of my educational background, I studied classical archaeology in Scotland, Edinburgh, and then went to Malta to study wall painting conservation for a brief period of time. And then I went back to my love for archaeology and came to Cardiff in Wales to study objects conservation. Since then, I have been immersed into the world of the conservation of antiquities. I've worked in Greece a lot. So I've worked in the ancient site of Mycenae. I have worked at the ancient agora of Athens. And also in Eretria, I worked on the most recent big discovery in Greece, which is a temple which is located in Amarinthus. And for the past 10 months, I've been living in Cyprus and working for a new museum that is being built, so the new Cyprus Museum. And so here I am in sunny Cyprus.
Very cool.
And I feel like you also have some experience with podcasting.
I do, not as much as Liz. However, I attempted to create a podcast for emerging professionals and students myself about 2 years ago. It was called the Future Conservators Podcast. And unfortunately, during my second year of master's, I just didn't have the time to continue. So I had to put it on the backlog for a little bit. And as I was thinking of reviving the podcast, I saw that you guys were searching for someone, and I applied.
It was meant to be. And those, I'm right in thinking those episodes from both Liz and Fedra are still available online, aren't they? So if you're interested, I know we've mentioned them before on the show, but just a re-encouragement for everyone to have a listen. If you're interested,
we'll pop it in the show notes.
Down in the show notes.
Jinx. Love it.
So we are a team of four co-hosts and we are a team of five on the recording tape because we also have with us...
Solange Masha. I am the production co-host, which I'm still kind of finding my way with what that exactly entails. But... at the moment, focusing on preparing for this season, of which this is the first episode.
She's being amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, she's being modest, but she's doing great.
Oh, thanks. scheduling guests to come on the show and setting up all the meetings and things around that. But hoping for some downtime between seasons to put together a fundraising strategy so that we can... will be paid.
Yay!
And the things we might want money for, like visits, road trips,
all the important bits,
review conferences. So yeah, that's my role, and I'm so excited to be part of the podcast because I've been listening for years.
Welcome.
I was a little bit starstruck in my first meeting. So yeah, I've been in the world of conservation for over a decade now. I started off doing a traineeship in a private book conservation studio. So that was sort of pre-program for 18 months in Cornwall. And I loved being in a private studio and it was the most fantastic experience. And then I went to do my master's in book conservation in London. And then I worked briefly at the British Library and then about 5 years at the University of Manchester. And then I left less than a year ago to start my own business. And I'm loving that. So this is really nice because now I feel like I have colleagues.
Aww.
So it's really bringing me that, what I really miss.
Oh, those are the important things. It's true. Oh, welcome, team. We're really glad you're all here. Also, I just want to say a huge thank you to everyone who applied.
Oh my God, I wanted to say that too.
So many nice applications from people out there. And we loved hearing from every single one of you. So well done, everyone who applied. It was a really hard choice.
It was really hard. And we had to, like, we listened to them all several times, didn't we? And then we had a couple of proper long chats about it. And I really feel like we made loads of friends, if you see what I mean. So it was so humbling and so kind of everyone to apply. So thank you so much. So yeah, we're not going to all be here every episode, guys. Don't worry. For people who are thinking, wow, there's a crowd. we've decided to change things up so that we're all talking about the episodes that we're particularly interested in. So we're going to take turns, basically, aren't we? There's going to be roughly two or three of us, the main hosts per episode. And then we'll do some of the things we normally do, like getting some guest hosts in if we want to and all of that. So
there's some juicy interviews, that sort of thing.
Juicy interviews is normal, yes. So it's not going to be, it'll be rare for the whole gang. But you will hear from us here and there throughout the season. Solange, you're returning for a full episode later in the season. No spoilers.
Got to keep people on tenterhooks.
So as well as the episode topics and contacting all the people, as well as that, you're also working on Patreon, aren't you? Which we're quite excited about. We've always had Patreon. It's a really good source of like additional material and funding for us. But we want to make a bit more of it, don't we?
Yeah, we want to give more content to our Patreon supporters and just encourage a kind of a community around it, engaging with the podcast.
And as a team, I think we've had some great little ideas where it's like, we want to do some hangouts with you guys and more glimpses behind the scenes. And I think it's going to be good. I think we're going to try a couple of different things and then see what you guys think. If you want to be on board with that journey, then definitely do join us on Patreon. So just let us know what sort of content you're enjoying. And that'll be grand. We look forward to hearing from you. It'll be great. Come join the little community. It's basically what we're saying. We're going to try some different things and it's going to be very exciting. I think it's going to be cool.
Please join us.
And honestly, you know, patrons already get, you know, like bonus content and stuff like that. But we're going to up the ante a little bit and make it a bit more exciting, a bit more sexy. As sexy as our lab coats and aprons allow.
Calendar coming out soon.
don't tempt me. There's a market here.
There is be most likely to be animals.
It's just all our pets.
Oh, yeah. My God, yes.
Oh my beautiful. God.
You know how cats love sitting on books?
Yes.
You
know, so
yes. Yes.
Yeah, try having a cat in your studio.
No!
And you're a book conservator.
Oh my God.
You know, I actually follow somebody on TikTok, Squeaky Conservator. She is a student in the US and she uses cat whiskers to apply small, like, droplets of consolidant.
Whoa.
No.
Very cool, right?
Amazing. You heard it here first, people.
I have to follow my cat around waiting for a drop of whisker.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
That's amazing.
Very
what
clever.
A good idea.
I did find a paw print in a book once.
From your cat or so from a different cat?
Okay. Historic.
Historic cat historic print.
Paw print.
I love it.
In the documentation.
I love it. It's like those clay tiles that you see from Roman days where there's always cat's paw or dog paw in it.
It's perfect.
And it's just like, someone was naughty. I love
it. So is that our first favourite then as a team?
Just pets? Just animal stories. Yeah. Yeah, basically. I mean, what's more relatable than that?
Five
people goofing out about animals. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. And if you're a conservator out there with pets in your lab, I want to see them, okay?
Oh, yeah.
I want to hear everything about them. Write in and tell us everything.
Please tag us on Instagram.
We have an Instagram,
Instagram now. That's the new thing.
Fedra is running us an Instagram.
Fedra, what's the handle?
Oh, so the handle is... it is the_c_word.
Yay!
Nice.
Follow us.
Link in the show notes.
Favorite Instagram conservation accounts to follow?
Yes.
Oh, favorite. That's perfect. Yeah, yeah.
I like the International Mount Makers.
They are my
favorite comedy conservation.
I like them.
Yeah.
They are really good. I have been following for years an account called Classical Studies Memes for Hellenistic Teens.
Very good.
It's very classical archaeology.
That sounds great.
Extremely specific.
Very good
content. I love it.
I really like fun conservators.
Oh, fun and conservatives. Yes.
Oh, hang on. I'm going to need to get the name properly because I feel like it's a play on words. Is it Reversible Mag, the zine?
Reversible Zine.
Oh, Reversible yeah. Zine.
That's so good.
If you're interested in super cute conservation content and super cute pins, they brought a swab out recently, which I love so much.
That swab pin is very cute.
It's super cute.
It's very cute. Mm-hmm. I've got their scalpel pin. It's really cute too.
Yeah, I do too.
Oh, nice. See, global as well, guys.
Oh, I need to get on that.
We're still waiting for your favourite, Jenny.
Oh, mine? Oh, okay. Because I tried to separate my work-life balance, I've not actually got all that many conservation things on my personal Instagram anymore. But I do like following the Lady Art Handler.
She's great.
What else? God, I mean, Conservation in Focus is good.
Conservation is focus. In Focus is good.
I like Bridget Mitchell on Instagram.
Yes.
Really nice, empowering things. We feel good.
Yes, absolutely. Also an absolutely amazing human being.
Oh my gosh, who's that? Hang on. Everyone has to stop whilst I work out.
Wait, who is this?
Bridget Mitchell.
She does coaching for conservators.
She does a lot of like, it's a lot of good like prompts and making you think about your business, frankly, and your own well-being and things like that. It's a lot of really provocative things that I really enjoy as provocations because, you know, often we do take quite good care of the things, but not really of ourselves. And I quite like that she gets spicy about it.
Yeah. I remember one where she said, do you charge for giving an estimate?
Yeah. And also, do you charge for thinking time and stuff like that? And I was like, oh, this is so interesting. No one else talks about this.
I will press follow right now.
Yeah, I just did that. Followed. So, Bridget, if you get loads of follows,
really random follows,
you'll know why.
Did everyone mention a favorite?
I think we all did. What else did I write down in that erratic list?
Oh, you have an erratic list. I love it.
I have the list here.
Oh, thanks, Solange. See, production coordinator already.
Favorite object.
Oh,
I mean, this will. I'm gonna go with maybe be painting for Liz.
Favorite object that I've worked on.
Yeah.
Is this worked on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Shall
that
we
is
do
hard.
Worked on and then ever?
What, just in existence?
Yeah. I think my favorite is always the one I've just finished working on.
That's fair.
We got the memory of a goldfish.
I do relate quite hard to that.
This is actually one of the only ones that I didn't really have an answer to.
Oh, it's because you love all things equally.
I do love a lot of what I've worked on. Actually, I think one of the most unique objects that I've worked on was I worked on an Easter Island head.
What?
Whoa, that's cool.
Oh. Is not a paintings conservation at all.
No. That's cool.
This was during my bachelor's degree, and my professor in Florence had a relationship with essentially the park rangers on Easter Island. And he had gone there in the past to conserve for private family-owned Easter Island heads, like ones that are part of generations. And I got to go with a group of students and conserve a privately owned head that was covered in lichen. So we had like the scaffolding up around it, and it was a lot of spraying with chemicals and wrapping in plastic.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a really, really amazing experience.
That's cool.
Oh, we should not have let you go first.
You can beat that.
One of my favorite things is when objects have in the past been restored by the owners themselves or show a lot of sign of having been used. Yes. I mean, this is particularly for, like, I'm thinking with books. There was this one guy that brought in, not to me, this was in Cornwall in the private studio I worked in. I don't think I worked on this object, but he brought in a book that he had tried to repair when he was a child.
Aww.
And so it had, and he'd sewn all around. I mean, it was crazy. So, you know, but it was very idiosyncratic, but it was lovely. That kind of thing, yeah, always gets me.
Do you remember if the work that he had done as a child was maintained in any way by the conservator?
Yeah, we would. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That is wonderful.
So I work on banners of different ages. Obviously, everyone knows this. And they're used, the trade union ones I used sort of for 100 years nonstop, basically, until they fall apart. So we see so much of the historic stitching and like the classic way that the banner fixers would have done it, you know, in so-and-so's studio. Mm. And then also, you know, thingamy-watsits, you know, union leaders' wife's sister is a dab hand and a needle and then does this sort of thing. And then someone's patched it with this. And this goes on from like 2 years after it was made to late 1800s to yesterday. And it's just so amazing. Often these things are in an absolute state. So my favourite object is one. It's a huge mine workers' banner that I conserved for the National Coal Mining Museum for England. I will talk about it forever. It featured in the physiotherapy episode because it gave me RSI.
Oh, yeah.
And it we've got a book called Banner Bright, which some people might know, that has loads of photos of big banners in them. And there's a photo of it in 1972, completely intact. And when it came to me, it was in literal bits. So at some point between the 1970s and its entry into the museum, it was used to absolute exhaustion. And it's that's my favourite object. Mainly because the conservation I did was amazing, just saying. But also because the story of it is just so rich and just exquisite.
It's cool that you could see a picture of it before it was conserved. Like, oh, sorry, but like from when it was in one piece beforehand. Because that's not something you usually have access to.
No, it's really cool. So they're sort of, I mean, that the mine workers are particular for that because their banners are so prized and so treasured that they sort of, they have photos of them over the years and they get them, you know, restored and conserved throughout history, essentially. And you have photos of them over time. So that's the nature of the really prized objects, I guess.
Pedro, do you have a favorite?
Oof, that is very difficult for me. I am one of these people who loves to hate. So I will complain about an object that that I'm really struggling with, but really I'm loving it. And I always choose the most difficult one in the series just because. I mean, for me, the best object I've ever touched, I didn't actually conserve. It was a notebook. It was during my first ever museum experience. I was 16. And I did a little work experience for 2 months at the Museum of Thassos, the Archaeological Museum of Thassos in Greece. And I was doing a lot of cataloging. But I was given this notebook that was started in 1911 by the father of Thasian archaeology, so Charles Picard, who happened to be also the great-grandfather of one of my best friends, which is something I found out later on.
What?
But it was amazing to me that I was writing as a 16-year-old in the same notebook that someone had written on 100 years prior, and that it was such a big name as well. You know, me, 16-year-old Fedra, writing the same notebook was completely insane to me, and I still think about it. And yeah, it's not an object I've conserved, but I've definitely touched and put my handwriting in it.
That's a really nice.
That's pretty cool.
That's really nice.
I don't know what makes a favorite, really. Like, is it the, you know, is it the actual object? Is it an intriguing object? Was it a satisfying end result? Was it in a shit state when you got it? Is it the attachment to it from your point of view? I'm so intrigued by what makes things a favorite object. If I'm going to go on emotional response when I handed it back, it's going to be a tiny, tiny kitten made of ceramic that had a chip in its ear. It was a very easy job. And I fixed a chip in its ear, and it was a proper repair shop moment of crying and, oh my God, it's beautiful. I can't tell that it was ever broken. And it was going back to someone's mum for Mother's Day. And yeah, like if we're going by emotional response and being like a really loaded, very happy chemicals in brain, then it's probably something very simple. A little ceramic cat with a chip in its ear.
You know, that's such a Jane response.
Yeah, thank you.
Shout out to our agony aunt, Jane Henderson, who you will hear from. It's the emotional response that makes it. Good. That's so true. That's amazing.
Cool.
Do we do least favorite objects?
Ooh. I try to repress those. I'm going to be honest with you. I think I'm happier for that.
Everyone's faces on the videos has gone very, very, like, contemplative.
Well, it's because we all have one. It's just
I know.
Do we want to dig it out, though?
I don't know. My least favorite ones are just ones that are boring.
Ooh, yeah.
It's not that the object is boring. It's that it doesn't have interesting problems. So it requires very boring work or no work.
I can see that.
Or
just I smoke sponge
putting it
done.
In a Melanex sleeve and that's it. Or making a box for it and not touching it ever and not letting anyone touch it.
Yeah, you're right. That is probably my least favourite. I'm totally going to jump on this, though, as it's the thing that you know will go in a box and never be looked at. That's the one.
I actually, I wanted to say, I worked on an object while studying at Cardiff Uni, which Chloe, you also worked on.
Oh, God. Oh, wait.
Yeah. An Egyptian mummy rabbit.
Oh, it brings it to the end.
Oh, yeah, I did that too.
Yeah. Your names were on there. And I actually learned lake catching through one of your videos, Chloe.
No way!
Yes. And I do not like textile conservation. It's not for me. It's for someone. It's for you. You know what it was? Everybody was working on ceramics and you could see the results. And I was sewing for hours and hours and hours with this tiny thread that was basically transparent.
And if you do it right, you can't even see it.
Well, yeah. Even with my magnifying glasses, I would lose it sometimes. And then I finally finished it. And I took an after picture and it looked exactly the same.
Oh, that's a mood.
Oh, yeah, that's annoying to you.
Great experience, but I think I will step away from textiles.
That's such a good answer.
It's such a good point because I feel like some of us on this call probably have more transformative before and after, shall we say? Particularly looking at Liz, but that's also true of Solange, definitely.
Yeah.
As for often, my stuff is just less brown. Yeah, maybe.
Same. Yeah. Yeah, it's frustrating when you know that the evidence that you've done really good conservation work is that no one can tell you've done any work on it.
But then that is also the sweetest thing, isn't it? When people are like, what do you think of this? Do you think it's more obvious? And they're like, where am I looking? Like, yes, thank you.
God, I feel like I always live in terror of that, where they're like, I always feel like someone's going to go, you didn't do anything. But so far it hasn't happened.
Actually, yeah.
But I always live slightly in fear of that.
I've had an intern, Alia, in my studio this month, and she's studying objects conservation as an undergraduate degree. So she's not done paper conservation before, and I taught her how to do a tear repair, but a very subtle kind where you literally just use adhesive, and she did it. And just seeing the look on her face after it dried when she goes, what? It's like there was never a tear. It was just that revelation.
Oh, that's so nice.
The first time.
Nice. It's beautiful.
Liz?
Yeah?
Do you want to give us a worst object?
Oh, God.
I could go first if you need some thinking time.
Yeah, you go. I'll
Okay. I'll join in. Okay.
So mine is sort of completely different to everyone else's answer because this is the hardest object I've ever done. And it's the soul destroying, I can only make damage answer. Like when something has to happen, describing it as a textile is dishonest, even though technically it was, because it was the consistency of the thinnest, most fragile shit paper that you can imagine, technically a silk woven textile in three pieces joined. The joints were actually the strongest part of it, stuck down around the edges with animal glue, question mark, paste, I think it was paste actually, to a super acidic board that acted as the backboard to the frame that it was sort of mashed into in the early 1900s. And I had to remove it. The board was super wobbly and very uneven. There was like no way out for this poor, horrible thing. So I just had to like super slowly scrape it off this board with water. And nothing else would work. And it was just soul destroying because I was working at like a millimeter at a time. It just took everything out of me. And I could only manage 2 hours a day because it took too much concentration. It was, oh God, it was awful.
I love what a super icky feeling this is leaving me in my stomach. It's just like, oh, no, no, no. Yep.
It's worked really well. The results are beautiful. It was just,
I
it was
don't
just
doubt
53
it.
Hours of the most intense conservation I've ever done in my life.
Amazing.
I feel like the client will listen to this because he listens and he will know which object I'm talking about and he will walk through the galleries and give it a hard stare, I hope. Yeah. It's now beautifully framed and supported. And
of course.
I did everything I could. So I guess it's also my favourite object because it required all of the things.
Yeah, there's that loose favourite definition again.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, my least favourite object, it was less the object and more the experience. Similar to Fedra, I think, where during my bachelor's, we worked on both paintings and frescoes. And going to the middle of the Italian countryside was lovely. Like that, no complaints at all. But hoveling in the corner of a ceiling on some scaffolding, wrapped in like three jackets, your lab coat, using watercolors so your fingers are damp, it was horrible. I have no desire to go into frescoes. More power to those who are capable of those conditions.
Yeah, I remember being on scaffolding myself, and I'm not afraid of heights, but I'm afraid of edges, I guess. So I was okay in the first, second, third floor, but then if I was on the fourth floor, it was just horrible, you know, and I was trying to concentrate on, you know, conserving what's in front of me or recording it, and I could not think about anything else but the fact that the scaffolding was constantly moving.
Never kidding.
So I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't continue into my wall painting conservation journey.
Can we just take a moment to spare a thought for those who may even as they listen are up a scaffold,
and
the scaffold is wobbling about because the winds are so high, and they're listening to this in their headphones because they can't hear it otherwise over the lashing rain.
Yeah, stay away from the air.
We love you. Please go and have a cup of tea. It'll be all right.
There's now a moth in here crashing into a light, so I apologize.
Aww. What kind of moth?
I'm not going to do like a species
That's
idea
actually a really
right now.
Good
right?
point, though, because I am in my studio. I think it's a moth. Favorite pest?
Favorite. Let's Ooh. Go for favorite pest.
Yeah, it has to be least Ooh. Favorite pest, though, right?
It oh, depends yeah. on your reasoning.
Can you have a favorite pest? One that's like least bad?
Well, I really like ladybirds because they eat all the pests I don't like and have quite a lot
That's
of them
true.
Around.
They are good. Ladybirds are adorable and they're good.
Far improvement yeah. on spiders.
I was actually going to come to the defense of spiders and say that spiders also eat things that I don't care for.
Yeah, spiders are good too, but they also kill the flies and the things that we don't want.
No.
All right. Well, I'm in favor of spiders.
If the spider leaves me alone, then I'll be cool with it.
The spider will never leave you alone. It'll end up on your face. No.
No.
I've developed a fear of worms from my excavation days.
Oh.
So when I was 18, I went on my first excavation, and we were all 18, stupid. And so people would throw worms at me. While I was excavating. And then
who throws
I
a
was
worm?
Also so freaked out by the fact that sometimes with my trowel, I would just accidentally cut a worm in two, and then they would become two worms. Mm. And then in another excavation I went to in Cyprus, for weeks I saw no worms because the land is so dry. Then they punished me for being too slow, because I was too slow of an excavator, hence
conservation.
And they put me into what they called the pit of despair. So in the pit of despair, my entire height was under the ground.
These work conditions are not okay, man.
No, it sounds very cruel. Sounds like hazing. That's what it is.
Yeah,
does sound like hazing. No, okay.
Who are these people? Oh my God.
I mean, I'll just toss it out there. Silverfish are my least favorite. I never encountered silverfish really in the United States. I lived in Wisconsin and Connecticut, and we had field mice in Connecticut, but no silverfish. And then I moved here to the Netherlands, and oh my God, they get into my books. I've seen them in museums sometimes. Like, ooh, I was at a photo exhibit a few months back, and I could tell that all of the photos mounted on the walls were taken out of storage, because a few times I spotted silverfish between the matting board and the glass.
That's bad.
That's okay.
Well,
that's bad.
Oh dear. No spreading who that was, where that exhibition was.
No, I won't mention it.
Yeah. Oh, that's not very good.
Although it was a very wealthy person who had sponsored it, egregiously wealthy. So I was annoyed in that respect.
That's hilarious.
I worked on the silverfish infestation this year, me and the archivist were looking at them and saying how prehistoric they look. Mm. And then I looked it up, and it turns out they are ancient.
They're ancient. They are super cool, actually.
Very persistent.
Extremely cool. Yeah.
Yeah. They're very successful.
Like spiders. Should we move on from the things that we hate?
Let's do adhesive.
Oh, favorite adhesive.
Yeah. I'm really curious to hear, because we're all from pretty different backgrounds.
Yeah, we are. That was accidental rather than by design.
I would love to learn something right now.
Good question. Who wants to go first?
Favorite adhesive? I think Jenny should go first, because you haven't gone first for a while.
Ooh, I am partial to some Lascaux 498 HV. I quite like it. Versatile. I like it.
We use that in paintings conservation as well.
Oh, really?
Nice. Today I learned.
What do you use it for in paintings conservation?
I was on a project where we made a little thin film sheet of it, and then sliced it into really tiny, half a millimeter strips. Whoa. And used it for bridging a tear.
Oh, cool. I've done that with Lascaux before. Cool. Can we have Fedra next, just so that we keep it even?
Well, I find cleaning shellac off of ceramic edges extremely satisfying.
I'm glad someone
you've
does.
Turned this on its head. I like that.
It's extremely satisfying. That's all I have to say.
Right, if we go with satisfying removal, I'm going to go animal glue is sometimes very satisfying.
Yeah, I was just going to say animal glue on the back of a book spine. You poultice it, scraping it off, with all the gnarly gunk that's on there. And also the gnarly smell. Gunk. Like people, you have to kind of pretend that you think it stinks really bad and it's horrible, but I actually really like it.
Love it.
I think the dog that was in our studio used to quite like the smell of animal glue.
Family, you know. Oh, that's super cute. Yeah. Maybe I should try Trev's on it.
I used to like parchment scraps as well.
Oh.
That's adorable.
I was actually in wall paintings in Malta. We experimented a bunch with mastic. And I was trying to convince my colleagues that mastic is actually an ingredient that we use a lot in alcohol in Greece. Oh. So we have mastic liqueur. Huh. Which is delicious. We have mastic chewing gum. We put it in desserts. Delicious stuff. And they were so confused because they had only seen it in glue form.
That's fascinating.
So the next time I visited Malta, I obviously bought them a nice bottle of liqueur and we finished it then.
I gotta go back.
I love your answers, Petra. There's been... I like scraping shellac off and I like drinking amazing. Mastic in alcohol form.
I love it.
So what's your favorite adhesive to use?
To use? So right now we're using very basic adhesives. We haven't really found, I guess, the most ideal adhesive because here in Cyprus, 40 degrees and above is a very common occurrence.
Oh,
so
man.
With paralloy B72, it's not quite a
no ideal, that's not gonna work
adhesive to use. And they use a lot of HMG in Cyprus because it's easy, readily available. Also in Cyprus their materials are not readily available. We have to order them from abroad as well. So it's very difficult to get our hands on specific materials.
When you say HMG, is that cellulose nitrate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to be controversial here. I quite like cellulose nitrate. It's really easy to use.
I like it too.
It's very easy.
I really like it. I know we're not supposed to, but I like
it. They tell you, oh no, you shouldn't use it at university, but it's so far in ceramics in Cyprus, it's pretty convenient.
It works, it works.
Exactly. Just don't splash it about and it'll be fine for 100 years. What's the point? Yeah.
That way, because, you know, at university they tell you testing, you know, and then you go into the world and...
This is why I get really, like, purse-lipped, slightly eye-rolly when I see, like analysis heavy journals and analysis heavy conferences, because I'm like, this is fantastic work. You've done so much. It's so good. It is groundbreaking. Mm-hmm. I am completely unable to use any of this information. I'm really sorry. Like, I'm sorry. I don't have the time. I just need to do it. And this analysis is great, but I am literally never going to have the money for any of these fancy machines. I have a microscope and a UV
light.
That
is a mood.
Thanks very much. Liz?
I have a favorite adhesive for
sure.
Oh, yeah. It's a bit unconventional. It's wax resin.
Ooh.
So wax resin has a really long history in paintings conservation. I don't know what everyone else's relationship is to it because I heard a few gasps.
None?
Oh, okay, great. I get to do a little lesson.
Yay!
So wax resin is a combination of a wax and a resin, traditionally historically beeswax. And when you have a painting that has become structurally unsound, the treatment is to line the canvas. So you adhere an additional canvas onto the back of the original. And one of the oldest ways of doing this is using a glue, a paste, that was done in Italy and in France and in the Netherlands for a very long time. But in the 1800s, they developed an alternative lining method called wax resin lining, which is where you take hot wax and resin, you pour it onto the back of the painting, you iron it in, and then you paint it onto the back of the new canvas, and then you iron them together to kind of create this placemat effect. Now, huge disadvantage is that the wax is liquid, so it does go into the paint layer as well. It goes through to the front of the painting. That was something that they considered to be a benefit in the past because it could also consolidate your paint layer. But over time, it becomes really yellow and brittle. And in the 70s, they placed a moratorium on the practice. And it's no longer acceptable to do wax resin lining. But you still find it done historically. And some of them are gorgeous, like they will last for the next few hundred years. They were done really well. That's fine. Others, horrible, just falling apart. Absolute disaster. And the reason that wax resin is my favorite is because my first painting that I had in the Netherlands was wax resin lined. It was one of the examples that's really pristine and gorgeous, so I didn't have to remove it at all. And then I was inspired by that treatment because I had never learned about wax resin until coming to the Netherlands. And I wrote my master's thesis about wax resin linings on The Night Watch by Rembrandt, and proceeded to do even more research into wax resin as a contemporary fill material, which is something that I think is a really nice fill solution for canvas. And I actually have put together a 5-minute recorded presentation for the Canadian Association for Conservation. They have a conference this summer. It's an online conference, and it is directed towards private conservators. The theme is Keeping It Real, Conservation in Practice. It's this June, so I highly recommend anyone who's interested in hearing more from private conservators get a ticket.
Oh, nice.
That's really cool. Well done as well.
So my favorite adhesive, it used to be, so in my little C-word bio that I wrote drunk in 2017.
You were drunk?
No. What? No.
This is an outrage. This is the first I've heard of this.
All right. It's good to know that this is how this works.
Yeah, well, you know, nice. When you're like... It wasn't the by design, but you asked me for a bio for the website, and I think I took like 2 weeks of being horror struck at the idea of writing about myself. And then I just happened to have had 2 pints, and for me that's vastly too much. And then you messaged me, and I just wrote something, and it was really like, it was fine, it was good,
perfect.
Because it just needed that, it just needed the surface of me just skimming off a little bit to in order to get it out, you know.
Exactly. Don't overthink it.
But yeah, in that recording I said my favorite adhesive was Klucel G, and it's now changed to Fenori.
I have done nothing with Fenori, oh, but I heard good things.
Facial expressions just went woo. So little context, it is a Japanese seaweed based adhesive, 300 years old, traditionally used to size silk for kimonos.
I can see how this is useful to someone in your line of work.
It's so interesting. I really like it. We had a student intern in the summer, and they speak Japanese, and I was like heavily leaning on them to go and do the research. Like, we need you. Go and do the research from Japan, please. Thank you. I don't know if they will. They are not beholden to me. So it's when you make it, it's very. It seems to me like a planty version of isinglass. Basically,
right,
like
okay.
you do the heating, you can heat it to higher temperatures than you can with isinglass, and you extract the goop, and then you sieve it in just the same way, and you dry it out in just the same way. So you create little dry discs that you then reactivate with water.
You have to make it yourself. You need to batch it. Okay.
Yeah, so you get the dried out seaweed, and then you soak it for a day, and then you heat it up for
this is just leaning
hours.
Further into the perception that conservatives might be alchemists or some description.
Well, I mean, one of the benefits is that it smells beautiful when you're doing it rather than
that's
anything.
Not true of
no it is not I first heard about it for the consolidation of paint, actually, as a really matte consolidant. It's not super strong. So like the previous tests that we'd done in the studio in 2019 indicated that it was just not strong enough for what we were using it for, which was actually pretty thick painted layers. But the more I looked into it for consolidation of like finer paint layers and then finding out that it was traditionally a kimono silk size got me thinking when I had that horrible silk. Okay, well, if it's traditionally a kimono silk size, perhaps it will help this very fine silk that I've got going. I read an article on it as a use for wallpaper conservation, and it helped them reduce the staining as well as consolidate the paper to the wall. And then on the next object I did, it was Fanuri that was the perfect thing for consolidating the paint because it didn't stain. It does stain, obviously, in certain circumstances, but for this one particularly, it was perfect.
You sound like a convert.
It's
not going to lie.
Great. It is great. I just keep finding uses for it, if you see what I mean. But the paint consolidation is, the context for that was unsized cotton, unsized oil painted cotton that had just started flaking off, and there were different thicknesses all over the place. And as I was able to apply it pretty heavily in quite large areas, and it didn't affect the color, it didn't darken at all, it didn't affect the flow of the fabric at all, or the hang, like the quality of the fabric stayed the same, and the paint was just more stuck than it was, like it was just really, really good. So yeah, I like everything about it. Everything from the smell to the fact that it works really nicely as an adhesive.
Oh, that's nice. How about you, Solange?
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to be really boring, but I do just love wheat starch paste.
I was so hoping you would say that, to be honest.
Oh, you're so paper.
I know. I just love everything about it. I love making it. It's really calming. It's like a kind of first day back in the studio after the weekend, kind of easing yourself in activity. Oh. You're just going to stir some wheat starch paste.
It's like making a little porridge.
I do it in the microwave, which takes some of the poetry out of it, but...
Hashtag freelance.
It's more efficient.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. But, I mean, the thing is, there are drawbacks to wheat starch paste, so I need to keep sort of poking myself to get out of my comfort zone and mix it with some methyl cellulose.
That's such an adorable answer.
I love it.
It's so good.
It's like a comfort one.
See, though, I think it's what you're used to, because I have made a lot of wheat starch paste before, but I'm still a little bit uncertain about various steps, like how do you tell it when it's done and all of that. That because I have more recently worked on a lot of Fanuri, I'm just simply more comfortable with that. So it seems like less of a faff to me.
Yeah.
And you can dry it out.
What this is teaching me about all of you is that you all use adhesives in really different ways for me. Mm-hmm. For me, it is a medium of sticking two bits together. And for you guys, it's like, oh, bridging something and then like little tear mends and making something hang nicely. Why on earth is happening? And I'm like, wow, I'm so basic.
You're not basic.
Mix these two bits together.
No, see, I just thought you were all really technical because I didn't even know what half the adhesives were. I don't know what mastic is, gonna admit.
It's a great drink, apparently.
A great drink.
It's a great drink.
Some kind of cactus? I don't know.
It comes from a tree specific to the island of Chios in Greece.
It's a tree resin, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a tree resin.
That was a great topic discussion, guys.
It was really good.
Yeah, it was.
We could have a whole episode.
Yeah.
I feel like we can still do favorite tool. I feel like I still want to know what people's favorite tool is, though. Okay, so two of you have brought props with you, which is amazing.
Well, I have this little bag.
Aww.
Which has a... This was used to be one big bone folder. So a bone folder, I don't know, you might not know, is used for kind of sharpening creases on paper. So if you folded it, you get a nice sharp edge. And amongst many, many other things, scoring, etc. And then I cut it down and made lots of little bone folders, which are really good when you're putting...
Oh, I really like it.
When you're doing... I use it particularly when I'm putting new leather on for shaping the head caps and the spine and stuff.
They're all sorts of different little shapes.
They're just fun to hold.
They look so pleasing.
And that one's made of horn.
Ooh, oh, that's wow. Beautiful.
That's so goth. Looks like a big tooth.
And this one was my grandmother's. Aww. She did bookbinding.
Oh,
that's so cool.
So bone folders.
No, I love it.
Customized bone folders.
Oh, that's so cute.
And the thing I like about bone folders is how tactile they are. They're just something really sort of like buttery.
They're
about
good
them.
Feeling.
And you do occasionally treat them. I haven't done it for ages by soaking them in oil.
I never knew.
And then they kind of take, they get like a really nice patina and it kind of makes them smoother.
Oh, cool. That's amazing. Yeah. So you feed the bone. That's so cool. Mm. That's good. Liz, we've got to see yours though.
All right. So mine comes in a little kit. This is an antique men's grooming kit that I picked up at an estate sale in rural Wisconsin.
Phenomenal.
Uh-huh. And it's just got a bunch of tools.
Oh. It's like a mini tool roll.
Yeah, yeah. I don't use all of them, but in particular, there's this pair of scissors that's like...
Those are amazing. They've got a great curve to them.
Incredibly sharp and absolutely perfect.
Nice.
It's got a few more like little pokey tools, which are always good. Some more sharp knife bits.
And they've all got nice handles as well.
Yeah, I love
Are they horn or are they like cellulose acetate?
They're ivory. I don't know.
Ooh.
It looks like ivory. It could just be a regular horn, not anything so fancy. But
that's so cool, though.
I would need to consult.
Yes.
Yeah, it's lovely.
That's so cool. Mm. That's amazing.
Fedra.
Yeah.
Okay, well, when I was 16, my parents bought me my first trowel.
Oh, such an archaeologist.
For my first archaeological expedition. And I named her Trudy the Trowel. I have not used Trudy the Trowel in a while, to be fair. However, she is in my toolkit. But in terms of conservation, I really, really love acupuncture needles.
Ooh.
I don't know if any of you use those.
No.
So they're super thin and long and bendy. So on ceramics, they're fantastic because you can get into any crevices or cracks and get all the dirt out of there. Some insistent salts mechanically. But because they bend and they're so thin, they don't actually leave any marks. So even if you're working under the microscope, under high magnification, it will leave zero marks.
Wow.
That is super cool.
That's
great.
So cool. I had never considered that. And cat whiskers.
Yeah, today we learned, right? What's yours, Chloe?
My favorite tool is a shout out to Pell tool because it's got Pell stamped on it. We're not sponsored. If Pell would like to give us some money. No, occasionally they give us stuff. It's
we'll
really
send
nice
you
stuff.
An invoice.
Oh, Lord's going to be so cross with me.
I think it's called a mini spatula. And I've got loads of great tools and they are all like, you know, the tweezers I bought from this model maker's shop with the guy who wouldn't look me in the eye and all of the, you know, like I've got loads of random tools from random places that are super useful. But the one I keep coming back to is this little mini spatula from Pell. And it's just so perfectly designed and judged as a thing to sell to conservators. And I just keep using it. It's got two shaped ends and one of them is flatter than the other. And it's just got a really nice tactile hexagon shaped handle. And you can just slide it into little places and move things. And like, it's just great. It's really, really great. And I used it a lot on the object that I had to scrape from the board. And it was just like the perfect, passive lifter that had as minimum impact as possible. I did drop mine. So one side has a barb. So I had to check every single time which side it was. I should probably get a new one, considering that it's my favorite tool ever. But the other thing I'd say is the curved needle.
Mm-hmm.
I love a curved needle.
That makes sense.
I love it. Yeah, I know. And all
like
different
all the threads.
Oh, I know. Mm-hmm. And I keep saying I'm an objects conservator, I'm not a textile conservator, but I kind of am just a textile conservator now. And the curved needle, just stitching with a teeny tiny curved needle, and in fact, exactly what Fedra said she hated, I just love it. With the thread that you can't see, it's just exquisite.
If you're ever looking for small talk at the dentist, multiple times I've pointed out to them, like, oh, you see that curved tool right there? Yeah, we use that in conservation.
Oh, is that so that they can't get into your mouth to do?
not a dental person, I can tell.
Oh, no, that and spiders.
Oh.
I actually have some old tools from a dentist. I asked some that he wasn't using anymore, and he gave me two. So I have little dental tools.
Oh, yes. Nice. See, people always say, ooh, conservators, yeah, dental tools, you should get some of those. I have a pack, but I've never used them because I'm using everything else. And if I had a small pokey thing to poke, I'd go for, you know, well, now an acupuncture needle or the spatula or so, you know, something like that. Yeah, cat whisker. Yeah.
Oh, I have a porcupine quill. That's
oh,
funny.
I love
oh,
my porcupine
I like those.
Quill.
I like those. Mm. One of my favorite.
How do you get one?
You should get one. Yeah, they are not that easy to get hold of.
No.
Though, Jenny, do you remember when we went to the zoo?
Oh, I know. And they were just lying there. And I just want to get in with the porcupine.
What's your favorite tool, Jenny?
Right. So historically, it's always been the long, slim scalpel handle, right?
Oh, yeah.
Always. And then also just any brush I'm allowed to murder. Brushes do not last well with me. And I upset people with this. And I understand that. But sometimes you need something used for stippling and it's not going to survive. You just know that, okay? But I was going to go for what my two most recent favorite tools are, because I feel like this past 6 months I've been on a journey of discovery.
Ooh.
One is I bought a random tool at a vintage fair that I think may have come from some sort of medical field kit. It is a strange little forceps thing that has really, really long protruding bits, and it's really sturdy, and it's got me out of all sorts of problems. It's very difficult to describe the tool because it's more of a visual thing, and I don't know what it's actually for or from. It has no maker's marks on it. It's really annoying, but it's a beautiful thing. And I just picked it up randomly and it turned out to be incredibly useful. So I love it.
Does it have ridges on the...
It does have ridges. Yeah, it does have little ridges.
I think I might know what that is.
See, out there, but several people are going to go, I sort of understand, but also I need to see a photo. But aside from that, my journey of discovery has been that I've finally started using some of my dental tools.
Ooh.
For the first time, I've had them for like 11 years, but I'm finally using some of my dental tools. And the one that's like oddly hooked and sort of curved, I actually love. It has been great for scraping off paint off things and getting just the right kind of curve when you're doing a fill. It's amazing. Now I'm like, I'm sold. I understand why I have these now. This is great. So that's been a journey of discovery. Dental tools is where it's at now.
Or cat whiskers.
I'm glad you had that revelation.
Yes, finally. But it did take 11 years, guys.
I think I've lost mine now. I had a kit, but I never used them.
Oh, you can have mine.
But
kit.
Maybe it's found an adventure somewhere else, you know?
Yeah.
The way lost tools do, they probably just end up somewhere and wander off and find something else to do.
They found the right owner.
Aww. Has anyone seen that film from the 90s, The Brave Little Toaster?
Yeah.
No.
Have you?
The animated movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we need to do a version. We'll have to do a comic book on the forgotten tweezers or the,
fantastic,
like, I don't know, sassy scalpel.
Trudy Trout. Was it
Trudy Trout? Could feature
Trudy the Trout.
Trudy the Trout.
Oh my god, this is so pure.
So, Conservation of Books, edited by Abigail Bainbridge, published by Routledge. You can pick up a copy of this for about £130 on A-Books, I'm seeing on Google. Or you can get a cheaper version on Kindle, about £30. I would say it really benefits from being in print if you can stretch to it. Because it really helps to be able to kind of, you know, find the section you want, flick through, find the bit you need, refer back to other parts, you know, maybe end up with a copy that's stuffed with bookmarks and dog ears like mine. And I mean, I use it all the time. I was really lucky to get a copy of it to review just when I left my job to start my private practice. And it's been my constant companion. It's like having a colleague in the studio with me. I refer to it very regularly, particularly section 2, which is bookbinding materials and their degradation. So that's really looking at the material properties. And the other section I use a lot is section 5, techniques of conservation. Those two sections work very well together. But the other sections... The first part is all about the history of bookbinding structures, and it's very comprehensive geographically and historically speaking. For me, I mean, I think it is very useful, obviously. It's perhaps one of the more academic sides where many of us are not going to be working on some of the more exotic items, but then, you know, those items may not be exotic to someone working in Tibet in conservation. And that's great. So also just really fascinating to read. Section 3, Approaches to Conservation, is more about the ethics side. And so there are some really thoughtful chapters in here. I particularly enjoyed Lauren Moonshot's chapter on previous treatments. Just beautifully written, really. Really thought-provoking. And preventive conservation has a section. This is an example of a section that could be particularly useful for perhaps people who are, well, and section 1 as well, actually, people who maybe are not book conservators practicing, but maybe an institution, someone who works in an institution where there isn't a conservator. And yeah, so the treatment techniques of conservation, that's treatments really. I love this because there aren't actually really many reference materials for us for treatments, and there's been a kind of hesitancy to share the secrets of our trade, I think, because people worry that lay people will get the confidence from reading something like this to have a bash at it themselves. And I don't know, to be honest, I think that's quite patronising, you know. If they want to have a bash at it themselves, fine. Their business. And many of us, perhaps people who've just graduated or even those of us who've been doing it for longer, it's really helpful to have a place to look to jog our memory. I always look back at my old notes and think, why didn't I write, you know, the percentage of that adhesive that I used? Why didn't I write that recipe down properly? Or you know, so, and you always think you're going to remember and then you don't. And it's very frustrating. So this is just an absolute lifesaver. I love it. Really comprehensive. The treatments are presented in a very kind of diplomatic way. You know, the pros and cons are weighed up. It's left up to you to decide, but the guidance is also there in the ethical sections. And anything you could possibly need to know about the conservation of books is in here as a starting point. And then it has thorough reading lists at the end of each chapter, sort of bibliographies that you can refer to for further information. So it's really a great starting point for any question you might have, and really kind of helpful on an everyday basis. So yeah, I can't speak highly enough of this book. It's definitely should be the first book you buy for studying conservation, or should be on every book conservator's shelf. So yeah, I'm very grateful it's been produced. So go out and buy it.
Thanks for listening. We're the C Word, and you've been listening to Jenny, Chloe, Solange, Liz, and Fedra today. Join us next time for an episode about getting a foot in the door. In the meantime, you can check out our website at thecword.show, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Mastodon, or Twitter, now called X for some baffling reason. Otherwise, you can email us at thecwordpodcast@gmail.com. The intro and outro music is Spring by Didi Music, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. And as usual, this has been a Wooden Dice production.